Okay, good afternoon, everyone. A lot of new faces, so very nice to meet everyone here who has just joined us. And looking forward to seeing more people who are coming just as we speak. Excellent. So we're going to continue this week with an actual Mizmor from Tehillim. Last week we did some introductory material. This week we'll start with the text itself. I do want to share one just quick additional source having to do with some of our introductory material. Someone sent this to me after they heard the shiur last week. It has to do with the authorship and composition of Tehillim. We discussed a couple of different possibilities for how David was involved in organizing Tehillim, writing it, most of it, all of it. Someone sent me the source from the Netziv in his commentary on Shir HaShirim, not Tehillim. He doesn't have a commentary on Tehillim as far as I know, but he does have one on Shir HaShirim. And he's explaining the name of the book, Shir HaShirim, and he says, what does Shlomo do? Well, Shlomo took some Shirim and created a Shir out of them. And so, sort of organized it into one new composition. That's a little bit different than some of the ones that he may have used to make it happen. And by analogy, the Netziv says in this commentary, David did the same thing. He mostly collected old Mizmorim, but with a little bit of editing. And so he gives a couple of examples. One of them I thought was kind of interesting. It's not, an obvious example, but there's a Mizmor Tehillim, Mizmor Tzadi, where we talk about the human lifespan. Yimei Shnotam, Shivim Shana, and if you're very, healthy and strong, you'll live Shmonim Shana, 70 or 80 years. That Mizmor Tzadi, it starts off at the top, Tfilah Le Moshe. So the Netziv says, well, we know that at the time of Moshe, people lived much longer than 70 or 80 years. There's no way Moshe would have said the average lifespan is 70 or 80 years because no one had lived 70 years until that point. People had lived hundreds of years. So David took Moshe's Mizmor and changed it to thing like that number, kind of be more contemporary and relevant. He gives a few more examples of places where it looks like David may have slightly modified earlier Mizmorim. He says Shlomo did that as well a little bit. It is like a fascinating source to add to the whole constellation about what David is doing with Tehillim. I think we're going to leave that topic now to the side and get to the meat and potatoes of an actual Mizmor, which is what we're going to continue with now. So the Mizmor we'll be studying today is Mizmor Vav, chapter 6 of Tehillim. To anyone who davens Nusach Ashkenaz here, this is going to be very familiar. To anyone who doesn't, I actually don't know if there's anywhere else you would have seen it outside of Tehillim itself. So we'll have to see if that is the case or not. What I think we'll do quickly is just get a quick survey of the Mizmor by reading it together on page number 2, and we'll start discussing some of the broader, perspectives on the Mizmor. So less, what does this word mean, and more, what's the structure of the Mizmor? What units is the Mizmor made of? And from there, we'll see what issues kind of draw our attention. So we start, L'Menatzeach bin Ginot al Hashminit, Mizmor leDavid. The introductory passage telling us how to play it on, what to play it on, maybe. I don't know what a Shminit is. The Midrashim discuss exactly what it is. Maybe it's an 8-stringed instrument. Maybe it's like an octave, like a certain note that you're supposed to hit. Whenever any of the commentaries start talking about music, I kind of get confused. I don't know anything about music. So any musical comment is kind of lost on me. But, which is a shame, because it's obviously a musical book. Hashem! Don't rebuke me in anger or afflict me in wrath. My translations might be slightly different than the ones you have here. It's always a little bit tricky to translate precisely. Chaneni Hashem, kiyum lalani, be gracious because I am weak in some way, I'm lacking. Rifaini Hashem, heal me because my bones have been petrified, I think is a good English word with kind of that fear, but also the connotation of weakness. V'nafshi nivhala ma'od, also my soul is nivhal, very much. V'ata Hashem ad matai, Hashem, how long will this be? How long will I be so afflicted? Shuvah Hashem chalta nafshi, hoshini laman shemecha, return, deliver my soul, save me. Laman chasdecha, for your chesed sake, or as a reflection of your chesed, perhaps. Ki ein b'mavet zichrecha, because in death there is no remembrance of God. No remembers of you. Bish'ol miyodalach. In the netherworld, who can give you thanks? Let me keep going, and then we'll see if we could piece together a structure. There might be one or two different ways of breaking it down. Yagati ba'anchati. I'm weary with all of my groaning. Ashche b'cholayla mitati. I
soak my bed each night, not like, you know, not in the conventional sense of wetting your bed, but, you know, you soak it with your tears because of crying. Bidimati, arsi amse, I melt my eres, which is like a couch or a different kind of cushioned surface. I like almost melt them away. There's so much crying. Ashishami kas eni, my eyes are weakened. Some Rishonim even sound like they like almost fell out. They're like so spent with tears. Atikami kol tarai, they've grown old. Like atik, they've grown old because of all of my enemies. Suru mimenu kol polei aven kishamashem kol bechi. All of my enemies, you should turn away from me because Hashem has heard my cry. My crying, maybe. Shema Hashem tchinati, Hashem tfilati yikach. Hashem has heard my tchina, my tfilah. And so you, my enemies, yevoshu vivalu ma'od, you will be ashamed, you will be petrified very much, all of my enemies, and you will turn away, yeshuvu yevoshu raga. You will turn away in an instant. So, 10 psukim of Mizmor, plus one of, you know, introduction telling us what we're, what like genre perhaps we're talking about. What are some... okay, let's start with structure first. How do you think we could break up this Mizmor into sections? Let's say I told you we had to separate 10 psukim into smaller units. Where would we maybe divide the lines between one unit and another? I'll mention now and start taking a look at it, but you could make divisions based on things like style and language, like what images are being used in a section. You could distinguish it based on the person. So speaking in second person versus speaking in third person or in first person. You might make divisions based on theme. You know, we start with one theme, we move to another. So where might we start dividing the Mizmor into possibly some subsections? Yeah?
Okay. I would take 1 through 4 as things that he's begging for. Begging
all right.
Hashem for.
Great. So the beginning of the Mizmor, 1 to 4, or I would say 2 to 4, because I think 1 is more of just
right,
like,
right.
Yeah, is you know, begging from Hashem,
okay.
Right?
And
so by genre, that works.
And the second one, 5 to 6, is like, you know, it's not so good for you if I'm dead, because then there'll be nobody left to carry things on. So it's kind of saying, oh, no, there's something in there for you also. And then the other would be the rest of it is, I'm just so tired, I just can't do anything anymore.
So we have 3 units here. We have, you know, 2 through 4. You know, you're really begging, like in complete and total distress. Then 5 and 6, you're arguing in maybe more of like an intellectual manner. Like, here's why it makes sense to help me.
Right.
And then you've brought 7 to 11, Zion to Yud Aleph, as the like, I'm so, you know, tired. Maybe let's try breaking up 7 to 11, because I think there's a division there. I think you could say 7 and 8 are this complete and utter despair, right? You're lying there in bed, you're weeping, you know, completely exhausted from all of the despair. And you hit 10, all of a sudden, we're optimistic. You know, Kishama Hashem kol b'chi, you've heard my cry. Hashem has listened to my tefillah, and now all of a sudden there's optimism again. Now we're really hopeful for the future. So maybe that's a way to split up 7 and 11. Are there any other lines, any other subunits?
So you're splitting it between 8 and 9?
I'm drawing my line after 8. The line I highlighted here, Suru Yenu Kol Poli Aven, is a little ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So we could talk about that for a second. You know, if I'm reading from the beginning of Pasuk Zion, so I'm so tired, I'm so weary, I've been crying all night, I'm fully exhausted, all of my enemies are surrounding me. Suru mimeni kol pole aven. Turn away from me all my enemies. If I just stopped there, I would say that belongs with the previous section. I'm saying, I'm surrounded by enemies and I wish they would all just go away. It continues in a more optimistic tone. Go away from me because what you're hoping will happen, right? Maybe the enemies are hoping that I'll, you know, succumb to this illness and die, but go away from me because there's no hope for that, right? I've been heard, I've been saved. So it's a pasuk that is a little bit challenging when reading poetry, and I'm not like an expert in these kinds of stylistic pieces, but in reading poetry, you know, one way to read it is to read it as a holistic unit, right? Like there are these 10 psukim. Another way to read it is to read it in progression, meaning as you read word by word, what are you noticing? What is changing? So just to point out one other example in this Mizmor, it's the other bolded line in Pasuk Daled. You know, psukim bet, gimel, you know, even the beginning of Daled, I'm in distress, I'm begging, I need help. A lot of I, by the way,
Chaneni Hashem, ki yomar ani, refa'ini. It's a lot about me, right? Here's what I need. Nafshi nivalam od, v'ata, by contrast, Hashem, admatai. So you might argue there that if you just stopped over there, you're saying, you know, I am in this distress, and now shifting from talking about me to talking a little bit more about you, talking about Hashem. And that I called this year talking to God, because I think one of the important questions in reading this mizmor is, I guess, where the mishorer, the author of this perek, is talking to Hashem, where he's not talking to Hashem. And paying attention to that is going to be a little bit important for understanding what I think the meaning of the mizmor is. So fine, so let that be our introduction right now. So we just have the broad structure of the mizmor. We start with begging for help. We move to just complete and utter distress. If you want to maybe distinguish within the begging, the nature of the begging, right? I need help, please save me. I'm in such pain, I'm in such suffering. And then also save me, laman chasdecha, for your sake, Hashem. Maybe those are a little bit different. We move to, I'm in complete distress, I'm crying. And notice there, actually, there's no more mention of Hashem in Psukim 7 and 8. We're not talking about God anymore. We're just expressing our suffering and our crying. And then Pasuk Tet, salvation, we've been saved. That's the overall structure of the mizmor. We can start digging deeper on a couple of more specific questions, and I think we'll see there's some more ambiguities that we have to tease out of this parak. Before we go there quickly, are there any questions right now that are sticking out about the content, about the language, anything that you want to say? Let's make sure we can try to address this. Great. So I'm sure they'll come up as we keep analyzing, but let's start from here. So our second section, I don't want to make another point about this mizmor in terms of the subject. So we've assumed, I think, starting from the beginning, who are we talking about? We're talking about someone who is sick. They are bedridden, their bones are weary, their eyes are falling out, they're being dimmed because of all the tears. This person is in distress. It might not actually be. This is an example of what we talked about last week as well, about the modes of reading of Tehillah, right? Whose voice are we really hearing here? So we just have a couple of options to weigh. Ibn Ezra suggests, first of all, the most natural choice. David says this mizmor when he himself is sick. So, HaKarov Elai, Kizeh HaMizmor, Chibro David B'Cholyo, Vayichim B'Cholyo. So he was sick, he was healed, and so he wrote this mizmor about how he was first sick, and then how Hashem saved him and he was healed. And then he wrote this mizmor. It sounds like he probably didn't write it while he was sick. I would imagine that's hard to do. But it could be wrong. It might be a better mizmor if he wrote it when he was sick. It might be more, you know, inspiring and more revealing about the nature of his experience. But we have another option in Ibn Ezra. O hayaderach nivu'ah al Yisrael shehin begalut ki kemo cholim. So it could be that we should read this mizmor not in personal terms about David and his own experience with illness, but in national terms. This is actually a metaphor for how we should understand exile. Being an exile is like being sick. That's why we're surrounded by oivim, we're surrounded by enemies, and we're in distress, but almost like as a tefillah, but we know that Hashem will hear us and save us. And so everyone who was kind of laughing and mocking us in our, you know, illness, quote unquote, is now feeling, you know, should be dissuaded because Hashem will save us from galut as well. So anything that might be true for the individual in illness is also true nationally. A third, you know, possibility, which I think is more related to how we would generally use this mizmor, is from Radak, where he explains in light of our third option from our first shiur, right? The personal reading, the national reading, and the universal reading. This isn't about David and his life. This is about anyone in their lives. So, and that will have a ramification for how we read about the enemies in just a second, but Radak explains how David wrote this tefillah so that anyone who was sick could use it. Ki harbe mizmorim shem tefillah u'bakasha. Many mizmorim that have an element of request in them, David composed them to make them available to anyone. And so one way you may have seen Mizmor Vav, even if you don't daven Nusach Ashkenaz and you don't say Tachanun from this parak, you might know it because it's a tefillah you would use either when you are sick or maybe on behalf of someone who is sick, because it very clearly seems to be talking about someone who is ill. A ramification of these different modes of reading. So we could talk about the Mizmor from a personal perspective or a national
or you know, universal regarding any person, but it has a ramification for how we understand the enemies, right? Anyone who's read Tehillim before gets used to this image a little bit, the idea that surrounding a person who's afflicted, there are all these enemies making fun of them. So if we're talking about David's life, we might be talking about political enemies, right? David faces many political enemies in his life, including family members, anyone who's trying to overthrow his monarchy. So when he is sick and he is dying, all of his enemies are rejoicing. Look, you'll be gone and we'll be able to have our way with the kingdom. Right? If we were nationally, the enemies might be national enemies, people who are, you know, other nations who see the state of the Jewish people. If we read it personally, it's not as clear what to say. I think most people in individual illness don't necessarily feel like they're being, you know, mocked by people around them. But they could, right? First of all, people might have fraught personal relationships in various areas or with various people. And even in halacha, in Hilchot Bikur Cholim, there are certain halachot about, you know, visiting people who are sick to avoid this problem. So for example, there's a halacha that if you know someone who you have a bad relationship with, the halacha says a sone, someone you hate, the best Bikur Cholim would not be to visit them. Because you don't want the person to think that you're there and you're gloating, ha ha ha, you're bedridden and I'm so healthy and young and spry. That's not something we want. And so the idea of enemies mocking in illness is something that we do see in halachic context as well, and I think is reflected a little bit in this section of Tehillim. But as we dig deeper, it's actually not quite as clear exactly what the person in Tehillim is suffering. So for, you know, obviously, or most simply, you have illness. Right? That's what Rashi says in source number 4. Chatza nafshi mecholi, I am ill, so please heal me. But you do have enemies mentioned here, and it's not obvious, right? We already said that illness could be a metaphor for exile. Maybe illness is a metaphor for other things as well. So Rav Elchanan Sanit, whose source Shiurim on Tehillim had been very helpful for me in my study, in the concluding portion of the psalm, in source number 5, beginning with the second half of verse 8, mention is made of the author's adversaries, who are workers of iniquity and his enemies. This suggests that it is they who are causing the psalmist such distress and endangering his life. So, already the subject is, we've lost a little bit of focus, right? What is distressing this person? Is it sickness? Is it his enemies? Or maybe it even goes deeper. Avi Baumol has another series of essays on Tehillim, and he reads it even more broadly. And I think this will help us understand why we use this mizmor, or part of why we use this mizmor for Tachanun. In Psalm 6, David expresses seeming despair, but in very different ways. He describes a physical ailment in verses 3 and 8, a psychological disease in verse 7, right? He's crying in his bed, Yegati be'anchati, I'm weary of all of the suffering and crying I have undergone. Then in spiritual low in verse 4, v'nafshi mipalam od, my soul is, you know, turned up, it's confused. And his enemies in verse 11. Could it be that David suffered from all these difficulties at one juncture in his life? That's one extreme possibility. You know, he was sick, and then his enemies came upon him, and then the enemies being upon you also distresses you, and that in turn exacerbates psychological and spiritual pain as well. This would be a really terrible mizmor to imagine. Or perhaps he was being figurative, trying to reflect on one aspect of the sickness through metaphors. Maybe the pshat reading might be, I am ill, and then all these other aspects of distress are part of illness. So there's physical pain, but then emotional distress. Enemies might also be part of experiencing physical pain or a metaphor for physical pain. I think we sometimes use that language even in medicinal contexts. You might talk about, you know, a war on a certain illness, and illness being, you know, we in the immune system, we talk about, you know, certain enzymes that are, you know, your metaphorical armies that are fighting off the illness. So you do use that kind of metaphor sometimes when dealing with illness. A third possibility is that the author combined all his fears and lonely feelings into one in order to drive his message home. So these aren't all happening simultaneously, but they all could happen. And so, right, one is more, that's a little bit nonspecific, but includes all the things that distress me at various times, even though right now I'm only praying about one of them. So if I'm being oppressed by enemies, I could use this mizmor, or if I'm sick, I could use it as well. But a final possibility he mentions, and I think this is a psychologically insightful one, it's on the bottom of page number 2. It seems to me that David describes the feelings of a person suffering a depression. And he goes on to describe how there are times when a person is, I don't know if he's speaking, you know, strictly clinically, but when a person is in a low state,
spiritually, psychologically, everything else in your life also gets wrapped up in that. And all of a sudden, your social relationships, you start looking at those with suspicion. Is so-and-so really laughing at me behind my back? This small headache that normally I'd, you know, ignore, but because of my, you know, state, I'm already so low, everything kind of piles on. And so being sick physically or being sick spiritually has a way of also bringing down other kinds of distress. And so it really all kind of lumped together to this morass of different kinds of affliction and oppression in one mismor. That, I think, is a very strong reading of all of this imagery, that the illness, the physical, and the illness, the spiritual, and the enemies are all different manifestations of different kinds of distress.
Are we looking at this as this was written for other people to see? Or are we looking at this as this was a diary?
So that goes back to our earlier discussion in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim seem to think it's David's personal diary. And then what we have to figure out is, so what was David talking about? Right? Is he afraid of enemies because they're going to usurp his political position? Like, what is the role of enemies for David in his personal life? If we read it more broadly, some of the pieces become harder to relate to, I think, in the sense that enemies, I'll speak for myself, maybe people have more vibrant and colorful personal lives. You know, there are people I don't like. There are people I don't get along with. I don't think I have many mortal enemies who, if I was lying sick, would like rejoice at my misfortune. Maybe that happened, and depending on your social context, that might happen more or less. But if we're reading it universally, we have to understand, so where are enemies in my life? Or where could enemies be in a person's life?
Could he just be saying this because he wants to hone the message in a little bit harder? It's not just an illness. There's all this other stuff that happens when you're sick. And so somebody else reading this will say, okay, I can. He just had a little thing here, so that was fixed. But he had all this stuff also going on, and it was fixed.
So I think you're taking the approach that kind of views each of these as distinct, and they're all kind of, you know, being conflated right now. There are so many different bad things that are happening right now as a result of or in confluence with being sick that you should understand the real depths of my despair in this moment. You should know how really terrible it is. I do think that putting the multiple different kinds of images here can be helpful in partially answering a question that we'll circle back to again in a few minutes, but we'll start with this now, right? Why in Ashkenazi Sidurim do we use this perek for Tachanun? Why is this the appropriate text? So one answer might be that it describes a wide array of different kinds of misfortune that we might be facing. And in describing a wide array of misfortune, we could better use that text to beseech God for being helped, as opposed to a mizmor that only spoke about illness that wouldn't be as applicable if I was feeling healthy. I have one that uses a wide variety of terms of distress and images of distress, and that might make it a little bit more accessible for a given person at a given time. So that might get to that question. We'll circle back to the Tachanun issue a little bit later, because there are a few other, you know, observations that one might make about that. Let's turn back quickly to the Mizmor, and we've discussed the structure before. Let's see if we can make sense of maybe the progression of the Mizmor. Right? If this is happening, you know, in time, right? Not a description of one moment, but a description of a progression of thought. So let's see what the progression is. We can start back from the beginning, starting from Pasuk Bet again. Hashem, do not rebuke me in your anger. Do not afflict me in your wrath. We jump into the middle here, right? How did this person get afflicted? We don't know. It doesn't say. Put on your, you know, religious hats for a second, right? You're a religiously minded person. You get sick. What are you thinking about?
Yourself, getting
over and
recovering.
Okay, so you're thinking, medically speaking, about recovering. What do you think about spiritually?
What sin did I have?
So, okay, two really different answers. That was excellent, right? Firstly, I'll start with this one. Firstly, there's why did this happen, right? Why am I being punished for something? Right, what did I do? So there's a little bit of, like, you know, self-analysis, cheshbon ha-nefesh, that you have to engage in when you're thinking about this. On the other hand, you're asking, like, I feel abandoned, right? If I'm close with Hashem at this moment, he should be healing me and helping me. So why am I alone in this? I don't see in this mizmor so much of the self-analysis piece, which I think is interesting, right? The Maybe a normal, you know, religious reaction would be, let me figure out what I did to deserve this. But here, it sounds like, you know, Hashem, don't be angry with me. Maybe there's an implicit sin here, but if there is, it's not mentioned. I don't know why Hashem's angry with me. That's already a little bit unclear. So, Hashem, don't be angry with me. Hashem, save me. Chaneni Hashem, because I... Why? What's the logic? Because I am weak. I'm languishing. Heal me because I'm so disturbed and distressed. So part of it is I'm sick. Maybe I know why, but more likely I don't know why. And I'm just in distress. And Hashem, please come back and help me because I need you. And then we noted that we turn focus a little bit when we hit Pasuk Hey. Va'ata Hashem ad matai. Now we're turning a little bit to Hashem, and we're a little bit less focused on ourselves, and a little bit more focused on God. Right? We're trying to make the prayer really effective. So start by talking about what I need, but in any good, you know, negotiation, if I want to convince you to do something for me, I have to explain why it's also appropriate for you, why it will help you. So, Shuva Hashem, chaltza nafshi, deliver my soul. Hoshini leman chastecha. Do it not because I'm in so much distress that I just need help, but do it because it's good for you. You are a God of chesed. You will help me. It's appropriate. And it's also good for Hashem. Ki ein b'mavet zichrecha, b'sha'ol miyodelach. If you let me die, that will also hurt you, so to speak, because our relationship, my personal relationship with you, perhaps, or even more broadly, my role as a king, if we're talking about David, my ability to proclaim your name and give you thanks, all of those disappear if I'm gone. So keep me alive because it helps me, keep me alive because it helps you. Right? In lots of prayers in Tanakh, we have this kind of dual element, right? Be merciful on us because we need the mercy, and be merciful on us because you are merciful, and that's how merciful beings behave. Then we stop talking to Hashem. You have Pasuk Zion and Pasuk Chet, and God, I think, is gone. So I davened, I asked Hashem, and I presented perhaps multiple arguments for why Hashem should help me, and Hashem didn't. So I'm lying in bed now, describing my own distress, but we're not direct. It doesn't sound anywhere here like we're just directing that distress towards God. I'm just expressing that. I'm crying. I'm miserable. I'm, you know, bechi. This visual, very visual imagery of crying so much that your bed melts away because of the tears, and you're able to swim almost in the pool you've created. I think that's a really important shift, because you could have written this mizmor where you daven to Hashem, and then right after you finish davening to Hashem, you turn around to your enemies and you say, guys, my tefillah was answered. This mizmor, at least, isn't going in that direction. I think it's presenting the experience of someone whose tefillah isn't answered, or at least not answered immediately. So I ask Hashem for help, I ask Hashem to be saved, and I'm still not saved. And b'chol laila, each night, right, continually, this is, b'chol laila is ambiguous. It could mean all night, but I think more likely each night. So I'm still in this continual distress over time. Right? I may be praying for several days, I may be praying for even longer. And each night I'm lying in bed and I'm crying, partially because of my illness and partially because I'm a little bit distant from Hashem and Hashem doesn't seem to be answering my tefillah. And after this, we go to Pasuk Tet and we see, Suru mi meni kol po'ale aven, kishama Hashem kol bichyi. It wasn't my tefillah that Hashem understood, it was my crying. So as distinct from the first unit of the Mizmor, where we're praying, we're making certain kinds of arguments in the normal way of davening for why Hashem should help. Here, we just cry. And when you cry, it's a voiceless prayer, you're not explaining yourself, you're just expressing distress, and Hashem hears that. He doesn't know Hashem heard that, I think. I mean, he says it confidently. He says, I know, I'm confident Hashem heard me, but he hasn't been helped yet. Right? Ki Hashem Hashem Tchinati Hashem Tfilati Yikach. It has been heard. Maybe it will be accepted. And what will happen in the future? The tense here changes in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the last pasuk of the Mizmor. Yevoshu v'yibalu mod. You will be embarrassed. You will be confused because I'll be saved in the future. All of these are future tense verbs. So I think what happens in the progression is as follows. A person is in distress, maybe from sickness, They're davening to Hashem for help. And their tefillot aren't answered. They are not getting the aid that they wish. And they're crying. And all of a sudden, in their tears, where you've removed the tefillah and all the logical aspects, and you just are purely, you know, emotional, emoting, so to speak, at God, that is accepted. The Gemara tells us in Brachot that the Sharei Dim'ah never close. Right? Even times where the gates of prayer aren't available to us, the gates of crying are. Because there's a whole other emotional experience that's available called tears. And that is the one we're confident with. My crying will be accepted, and after my crying is accepted, then Shema Hashem Tchinati, Hashem Tfilati Yikach, also my beseeching, also my prayer, all of it's going to be accepted now that I've hit this low point. I haven't here offered an explanation for what did crying do that davening didn't. I'm not sure about that. I don't think it says in the Mizmor directly what crying did that davening didn't do that led to the acceptance and the salvation. It could be crying is like more emotion and more connection, and the more connection you have, the better, so the more emotional you're being. Or it could be that the, you know, argument aspect of prayer, the part where we justify ourselves, isn't what gets accepted. What gets accepted is Hashem seeing us and our feeling of need, and that being somehow appropriate to be accepted in a way that tefillah in the more ritualistic sense, perhaps, might not be. I think in some ways it actually relates to the overall question of using tachanun, and we'll probably end here, or close to here. I put on page number 3 the text of tachanun. And it's a little bit interesting in that it's a little bit different than the Mizmor. We don't just use the paragraph of Tehillim, we also use a little bit more. So the first thing we do at the beginning of tachanun, we add Vayomer David al Gad, Sar le Ma'od, Nipala na Viyad Hashem, Kirabim Rachamav, Uviya Adam al Apola. Rachum v'chanun chatati lefanecha, Hashem malei rachamim rachem alai v'kabel tachanunai. So unlike in the version in Tehillim, not the version, I mean, unlike the Mizmor on its own, where we're just in distress, but we don't necessarily know why, the way we use this Mizmor in tachanun is as a response to sin, right? I explicitly say chatati lefanecha is part of tachanun where we admit our failures, and then we beg Hashem to help us. So that's one interesting shift. We kind of add the element of avera, add the element of sin there, where it wasn't necessarily present. And even the pasuk about David before is also in the context of David. It's the end of Sefer Shmuel. David does his illicit census and is then being punished for it. And so he says, I want Hashem's punishment. I want it to come from Hashem. And seems to be the logic, ki rabim rachamav, because he'll be more merciful to me than a human being will. Perhaps because, as we saw in the Mizmor, the arguments, the beseeching doesn't necessarily work, but Hashem will always have compassion. And that's something that you could rely on. The rachamim that you get from crying as opposed to, you know, prayer in the more formal sense. But that's an interesting shift. I also think it's interesting, just when we talk about the using this Mizmor as tachanun, tachanun originally wasn't actually a fixed text. It was appropriate after davening that you should beg God for things. But there was no, you know, originally when tachanun was instituted, there was no fixed text. Everyone just requested from God what they needed in their own language. And eventually, over time, we started selecting particular passages that were particularly appropriate. And I think one reason we mentioned earlier for using this passage is that it seems to encompass a wide variety of human experience, a wide variety of causes of distress that you might need help with. But another reason, another logic, might be that it specifically gets at the idea of crying and how that has a special way of being accepted in a way that other aspects of tefillah maybe do not. A thing that's challenging, obviously, is that when you say tachanun every day, it's hard to hit that emotional point. But tachanun is almost a reminder of that insight, that we, you know, fall before God and we beg, and we, you know, maybe make some explanations for why we should be helped, but we hit the depths of despair, and we could expect Hashem to hear us and to save us. I'm still a little bit confused. I'll end with this because I'm open to insights. I still feel like There's something missing in sort of understanding, you know, you hit the depths of despair and you need to, and then you're confident you've been heard. So being confident you've been heard, I get, is a common idea you see in Jewish tradition, where you daven and then you should behave as though you feel very confident about the verdict. We see this in Rosh Hashanah, we see this on Yom Kippur. But you could just imagine someone who's in the depths of that kind of, you know, depression, that kind of, you know, true sadness, feeling, you know, so lost and so distant. The transition feels a little bit jarring. Maybe David here is trying to offer us something of a religious model to try hitting that point where you should know. It's almost an insight to us in our moments of despair where we feel distant, we feel lost, we feel afflicted, and we're not seeing answers. We're not seeing that our davening is working, that we're being saved. And maybe the mizmor is a reminder about the kind of confidence that maybe we should feel, that in the connection we have to Hashem, we actually should see those low points as places where Hashem will come and help us most and give us a sense of optimism and confidence that we don't necessarily have.
Maybe you're so spent when you've expressed it that you're kind of empty and you just feel, okay, I'll just trust Hashem.
So there may even be, I think what you're alluding to is a psychological component, right? People use this phrase, you know, people need a good cry sometimes, right? There's almost a sense that like hitting the despair, so in a moment of despair, everything is terrible and you're lost, and you have a good cry, and then afterwards you feel a certain kind of relief, that almost hitting that low point emotionally is the beginning of picking yourself back up, physically and religiously. That could be. I think that's a really insightful piece as well. Yeah.
And when you cry, you're really in despair. I mean, just saying the Tehillim itself, but when you get more into where you're crying, you're like desperate for something. Because I know there was something that came up in my life and I started crying and it was something. And that time, one time, I kind of felt like Hashem was hugging me and saying, it's okay, everything will be okay.
And so
that's what, you know, is being said. The crying is a more of emotional distress.
I appreciate your sharing that. I mean, that sounds like a lived experience of this parak of Tehillim, which is incredible. So I think I'm not sure that the right way to learn Tehillim is to walk out and say, okay, here is the instruction, like the strict lesson, here's what to do now from Tehillim. I'm not sure that's how poetry works in general, and I'm not sure that's how religious poetry works in particular. So I don't know if we should walk out and saying, oh, this Mizmor of Tehillim taught me that, you know, crying is a, you know, powerful religious experience. It might, but it might be that our goal is more to appreciate the different emotional notes in the Mizmor and have a language for that, be able to relate to that, and especially if we say Tachanun frequently, to be able to sort of pick up on some of those notes as they hit us in our own lives. And sometimes you'll say Tachanun and it will be hard to relate to any of this because things feel like they're good. And sometimes you'll say Tachanun and you'll say, I get it because I am sick or I know someone who is, or I do have enemies and I have people who are causing me grief in my life. Or I feel like I need to cry because things are as painful as they are. And picking up on aspects of this, but then feeling confident that Ki Hashem Hashem Kol Bichi, that Hashem does hear and does embrace us. As the experience David is modeling for us, and maybe we can have and need in our own religious lives as well. I'll leave it here for...